He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and you have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So if you have a question, a comment, a concern about wills, trusts, or probate, if you're wondering how do we beat the high cost of long-term care, if you're wondering, you know, what is all that Medicaid and nursing home stuff about, now is the time. This is your moment. See? It's like the Olympics, you know. Ding, 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 ding. Well, this is your moment to give us a call at 888. See, now, of course, the Olympics are over. But the show isn't over. And now you can give us a call at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And get your question, comment, or concern on the air. You know, whether that's buying or selling a home, that's the real estate part. Starting, stopping, or keeping your business going, that's the business part. Or, you know, whether it's that estate planning, trust, wills, all that good kind of stuff. Easy to do, 888-463-2843. Of course, if you'd like to come to one of our free life plan workshops, you know, if we could make it easier, we would. But all you have to do is get on over to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com, and there's the whole schedule is right there. Hey, you know, we just started a something new this week, very exciting for me anyway. You know, we do the 8 West and the Take 5 shows once a month, and now on a weekly basis on Wednesdays, sometime after 6:30. You know, they can't really promise you exactly when, but over on Fox, we're going to start doing Carrier's Law. And we get a little bit further afield than what we do on the show. You know, we try to be a little more topical about it. It's during the broadcast, during the news over on Channel 17. So if you'd like to, if you want to see what it really looks like, well, that's Wednesday evening, sometime after 6:30. We're trying to do it at 6:45. The last time was right around 6:30. Anyway, after 6:30, Carrier's Law on Channel 17. So I'd love to see you. Love to see you over there as well. What else we got going on? Well, of course, the usual life plan workshop. And, of course, on March 15th, we've got the double St. Patrick's Day workshop. Always love to see people at the workshops. Every week the good Lord brings, and twice on holidays. So special stuff going on St. Patrick's Day. The rumors about green coffee are absolutely false. Well, at least they're false so far, and unless we can figure out how to make coffee green, and then we might do that. But no green beer, sorry. Anyway, let's get to some of our emails. Love to get the emails. Elder father under undue influence by elderly woman and daughters for financial gain. Is it considered undue influence and elder financial abuse if the perpetrator is also elderly but conspiring with her daughters to extract money from elderly men? How can we find out if they're doing this to other men? Would the DA be interested or able to investigate a case that looks like a black widow lifestyle? Several previous husbands dead. Yikes. Well, here's the deal. No question that if you suspect that your dad is being unduly influenced or being financially exploited by anybody, it doesn't matter how old they are. It doesn't matter if they're conspiring with the black widowette daughters. Certainly, you can call Adult Protective Services. They will be on it like white on rice. Seriously, I mean, we have very strong financial elderly abuse type statutes, you know, financial exploitation, the elderly statutes, laws, and they're serious about them. You know, so if it is a situation where now can you prove, you know, especially if they're ever just as elder, you know, an elderly. So I don't know. Are we talking 70s, 80s? You know, I got to tell you, it could happen. You know, it could happen without the Black Widow thing. I was visiting my dad recently down in Florida, and we're out to dinner at the restaurant. It's me, my wife, and the kid, you know, the five-year-old, and dad. You know, we're eating at the restaurant and talk about Notre Dame and this and that. And the lady from the neighboring table pipes up, "Oh, well, you should join the Notre Dame Club down here in Naples," and da-da-da-da-da, and gets in and then asks my dad straight up, you know, "Are you unattached? I'm unattached. Maybe you should come to the club." And it's like, yee. You know what I mean? And I don't think there was anything nefarious. I mean, I don't think it was a Black Widow lifestyle or anything, you know, but, you know, I think there are definitely people like companionship and all the rest of it. And the fact of the matter is, women outlast men, generally speaking. So the fact that you had somebody who would, you know what I mean? It's not obvious to me, right, that anybody's killing anybody, you know, but when the money gets involved, right, and the accounts start shifting over and all the rest of it, then you really have to start wondering. But you know how this happens, I'll tell you. And this just points up why it's so important to be to really be planning ahead. It's not at all unusual, and especially if you're long-lived, you can, in a situation like that where it could happen more than once. You know, when someone remarries, you know, the question is always, if we die, do we leave the money to our kids, right? And then what if the kid dies before we do? Do we give it to our grandkids or do we give it to the in-law? Well, I tell you what, your kid wants you to leave it to their spouse. I've just seen that too often not to know that that's true. If the kid is in the room with the parent making the decision, right, or the parent consults with the kid, frequently it'll go to the in-law. They're like, "Well, if I die first, I want my wife to get it, or I want my husband to get it." That's how it goes. But if they're not around uniformly, not always, but pretty much always, it goes to the grandkids. Do you see? Because the idea is that the money would follow the bloodline on down. And I think that's appropriate. I don't have any particular heartburn with that. Now, if you really like your in-law, okay, fine. But in general, wouldn't you think that parents would take care of kids, grandparents, grandkids, right? And then spouses take care of each other? I mean, if you think about where the responsibility lies, it seems to me pretty obvious that that's the way it flows. And the other aspect of that is, what do we do, you know, if you leave money to somebody's kids, you know, so think about it. Your kid has died before you do. Do you give it to the mother of your grandchildren, the father of your grandchildren, or do you set it in trust, very important, in trust, for the benefit of the grandkids? Well, it seems obvious to me that you would leave it in trust for the benefit of the grandkids. Do what you want. You know, we do it every which way. But you know, my suggestion would be, think really hard if you're not going to leave it to the grandkids. Because, you know, if you are leaving it to your grandkids, doesn't that reflect back, doesn't the benefit reflect back to the in-law? Well, it seems pretty obvious that, you know, it seems pretty obvious that it does. You know, that it would be for their benefit. You know, so I don't have any particular heartburn with that. I mean, it would seem to me, you know, kind of obvious, actually, that if you've benefited, you know, if you're benefiting the kid, right, then you're benefiting if you're benefiting the grandkids, then you're benefiting the surviving parent. And you don't run into the problem where the surviving parent remarries, which apparently is the one of the things that's going on here, where if the surviving parent remarries, right, and then the parent of the grandkids dies, you know, your former in-law dies, well, now they get everything, you know? So it's one of those things. You got to go through the thought process, all right? There's no one-size-fits-all answer, that's for sure. But it is a good idea, okay? It is a good idea to be thinking about how are we going to provide for this. And, like I say, lots of times what we're looking for is, you know, parents take care of kids, grandparents take care of grandkids. So that's my thought. But as far as, you know, the whole Black Widow thing, you know, things look differently to different people. And I'm not saying that that's not what's going on. And I think definitely, if it is, you know, there's no question that they're going to be interested in that. We've got just a minute here. Once the estate of a deceased is closed, has been to probate with final accounting, how long does it take for distribution? All related bank documents have been signed by the heirs. Attorney fiduciary requested release. All creditors identified. Property taxes paid. Well, I don't understand how you can close the estate without making a final distribution. In fact, when you submit the paperwork, the sworn statement, to the probate court, what you're saying is that that's already been done. Okay, you've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. And since the weather is so warm and cozy outside, I thought we'd celebrate with a little calypso music for the week. That's right. That's our bumper theme for this week, in case you were wondering. Because, you know, now that it's getting so warm and toasty around here, it's almost like being, you know, on the banana boat. That's all right. Anyway, give us a shout at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843 if you would like to get your question, comment, or concern on the air. Whether it's wills, trusts, probate, Medicaid, long-term care, elder law, business law, or real estate, just give us a shout, 888-463-2843. And for those of you who follow along the letters on your telephone keypad, that is 888-GO-DAVID. Marketing brilliance on display. You can also email me, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. Love to get the emails. Or go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com. Those are the same thing, really. Anyway, on the website, you'll see a list of our upcoming workshops. We still have room in the St. Paddy's Day workshop. The St. Patrick's Day workshop is actually on March 15th, just to give you time to recover in time for the 17th, when it is actually St. Patrick's Day. See, we're always looking out. What does that guy on TV say? Always looking out for you. Yeah. Anyway, so I think we've covered the bases there. Give us a call, 888-463-2843. We've got to get back to some of the emails here. If a conservator was appointed by the court to oversee husband's financial and daily affairs, can I reverse this court order? Well, the short answer is yes, but they developed the facts a little more. A husband, disabled vet, stays long-term care nursing facility, was transferred home, where according to Adult Protective Services investigator, living conditions were not adequate due to construction, and was taken into custody by the state, transferred back to the hospital with a court-appointed conservator to oversee husband's financial and all other affairs. Okay, now here's the thing. We've got one side of it, right? Well, these guys have got things to do, all right? Adult Protective Services, they've got other things to do, okay? I'm not saying that you don't get people who misconceive what's going on, you know, or misconstrue the facts, and then once they're, you know, investigators, you know, people are people, okay? And when people get a preconceived notion about the way things are going, all right, or the way things are, it's awfully tough to break out of the tracks. See, this is why people who go to probate court, right, in a conservatorship or guardianship or something like this, whether it's minor children or your parents or whatever, you are so ill-served by representing yourself. It's not that you can't do it, okay? It's not that you can't. It's not like anybody's going to make fun of you, right? But, what did your mother always say? First impressions, right? First impressions are lasting. Why are first impressions lasting? Because that's how people are made, okay? That's just the deal. You know, well, the judge is supposed to be fair. Yeah, you know, I know they're trying to be fair, okay? But you can't get away from the first impression. I have learned this the hard way. I'll tell you what. I've been in court where I go second, right? And the first person gets up and just slanders my client. You know, a whole bunch of half-baked rumors and innuendo, things that weren't true, things that were disproved, all in the opening statement. Well, listen, by the time they've gotten through five minutes of listening to the garbage, right? And now you got to try to explain it? Good luck for that, okay? And if you're not represented, all right, you don't even have somebody who can make the attempt, okay? So here, you know, look, we were what, building a wheelchair ramp, fixing the bathroom, some construction projects, whatever it was, okay? And so they look at that and they say, hey, you know, construction project, we're not very good. Can't be cared for in these circumstances. We've got to get them back. Well, now, you know, what does that look like? That looks like you're not caring for them. And apparently the court agreed. And they appointed somebody to make health care and financial decisions for your spouse. Hokey Pete, how did that happen? Well, you didn't put your best foot forward. And somebody who's been down the path before, okay, who's been down the road before can tell you, look, you can't have this stuff around. You've got to do this, this, and this in order to present the best case. Not to lie about stuff, not to, you know, create facts that don't exist, but simply to advocate for, to put the best face on the reality. Okay? It is not at all unusual, not at all unusual, okay, for folks to, not for the judge to get a bad impression up front. And when that happens, trying to fix that is like impossible. Okay? So in the question, you know, that our emailer wants to know, well, you know, can this be fixed? Can we, is there a way to fight and win this battle in court? Yeah, there's a way to fight and win the battle in court. But you're kidding yourself if you think it's going to be an easy situation, because it won't be. Okay? It'll be a very difficult thing, to do it. It'll be very difficult to win something like that. Especially because, you know, they're already going down one path. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible, right? And it's not at all impossible. It's just at this point, you know, the judge has already made a decision to appoint the conservator. Can you get that overturned? Yes, you can. It happens all the time. Okay? But, you know, can we fight this, or is there very little chance? You know, when you get into the, is there a good chance or bad chance? Well, it depends on the facts. Okay, who knows if there's a good chance or a bad chance? You don't know. You start off with two strikes, that's for sure, you know. But people have been, you know, two outs and two strikes and come back and win the game. I mean, it can happen. But it's an uphill climb. And then the last part, what would it cost in legal fees to be represented in a case like this? And again, what does it depend on? It depends on the facts. It depends on what's the reality of the situation. Who's doing what? You know, was this a matter, you know, were you putting a wheelchair ramp in, the real wheelchair ramp, just what, and widening the doors so you could go to the bathroom? You know, is that what you were doing? Were you building a home entertainment system? I mean, who knows? What was the nature of the construction? Okay? So, one of the most frustrating and most common lawyer answers people get is, it depends. But you know, so often, it does. I mean, that's just the flat reality of the thing. It depends on what's going on. I will say again, whenever you're going to court, if you're representing, you know, it's what, like they say, a lawyer who represents himself as a fool for a client. So much turns not on, you know, the chiseled in stone law, but on how does the thing look, okay? And if you show up unprepared, sloppy, and everything else, you know, what are you thinking? I'm thinking that the judge is going to run roughshod over you because the other side's going to be more prepared than you are. You don't want that to happen. You're listening to David Carrier. I'm your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. And to welcome the recent warming trend, the balmy breezes and the bright sunshine, we're focusing on, you know, sort of that Caribbean vibe, a little bit of a calypso today. So, if you believe that, I've got some swampland in Florida for you, too. Hey, now's the time to call 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. If you'd like to get your question, comment, or concern about wills, trusts, or probate, about elder law, about Medicaid, long-term care, all that good kind of stuff, real estate or business law, now's the time to give us a call. 888-463-2843. And, of course, you can always sign up for the workshop. Easy to do it. Just go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com. You see all the upcoming workshops. These are the things that we do every single week the good Lord brings, and twice on holidays. And, of course, the next holiday coming up is one that's near and dear to my heart, St. Patrick's Day, and we will be doing a couple of them on March 15th. I understand we still have a few seats left. So plan ahead. Plan ahead so you can plan ahead. Isn't that good? You know, one of the things that comes up time and time again is how do we balance the interests, okay? And one of the things that's kind of been developing, I would say, over the last several years has to do with the way Michigan annual property taxes are figured. Let me just give you a little recap. Back in 1994, the Constitution of the state of Michigan was amended to increase the sales tax from 4% to 6%. Okay? And the Constitution requires that 2% of the sales tax, which is a third of the sales tax revenue, be distributed to the local school districts in the form of per-pupil grants. So every student in the state of Michigan is guaranteed a certain amount of money. Now, this was done by the Republicans. You know, we hate the Republicans, right? Yeah. But it was a brilliant thing in that it removed a major source of funding. You see, this was around the time when we had school districts going broke, closing in March and April and stuff, you know, because the local property taxes were insufficient to support the local schools. That's the way it had always been done. And so Governor Engler got the idea, hey, what if we make the dollars independent of, you know, every pupil gets a certain grant, you know, and it's thousands of dollars. I forget how much it is exactly right now, but it's several thousand dollars per pupil. Okay. Now, part of that, you know, this was a whole big package, and part of that package was, okay, because we're not going to be so dependent on the local annual property taxes, real property taxes, what we're going to do is we're going to cap those property taxes, because people at the time were being taxed out of their homes, off the farm, things like this, because every year as the values went up, this was an inflationary time when the real estate values were going up, as the values went up, well, the property taxes went up. Are you with me on that? So if your property's worth more, then now you got to pay more tax, but you're still on the same fixed income. Oops, now you got to sell the farm, the cottage, the house, whatever it is. So as a way of keeping people in their homes and rationalizing public education, all right, we increased the sales tax and capped the amount that they could that the amount of the increase in your taxes to the annual property taxes to a couple of to just a couple of percent a year or inflation, whichever was less. We'll get back to that after we talk to Robert. Good morning, Robert. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your service.
Well, thank you so much. How can I help?
I have a hobby, and I'd like to maybe possibly turn it into a business. I was wondering at what point I should do that.
How about when you're making money?
whenever I start making money, I should turn it into a business.
Well, let me ask you this: what's the hobby?
Video work. I like to record people telling their personal stories.
Oh, okay.
And mix it in with photographs to enhance the story, and then put them on DVD and you know.
Are you good at it?
Like we see them, I think so. I've had quite a few compliments on my work.
I gotta tell you, I think I was just at the one of our directors of initial impression. That's what we call the people who answer the phone at the office, our directors of initial impression. Well, Laurel just lost her dad, and we were at the wake last week, and they had, you know, one of these things going on. It was a video. Now, they didn't have the, I guess you do interviews with the survivors as well, is that right?
I could, yeah. My initial thought was just to do, most likely the elderly.
Yeah, yeah.
People that are nearing the end of life.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe hospice patients.
Well, you see, What they had at his funeral was the slideshow. You know what I mean? They had the music going, and you know they would go from
all that kind of thing.
Yeah,
would just sell photos.
Yeah, yeah. Which is very you know which I think is really neat when they do that, because you get a sense of who the person was, you know, through the. I think that's a fabulous thing to do. And I think that, especially if that could have been interspersed with some, you know, personal memories or something, I think that's absolutely wonderful. I really, really do. One of the concerns when you're turning a hobby into a business is that the question is, what is the nature of the liability that could arise from the business? So, if you're you know, teaching people how to juggle chainsaws or something like that, well, you know, it doesn't matter if it's still a hobby and not quite a business yet. You'd still want to incorporate that or put an LLC around it because of the liability. You know, somebody slips with a chainsaw. Oops. Oh, well. You know, I mean, you could have significant liability. With the videos, it's really much less obvious that doing a corporation or a limited liability company, I mean, what kind of liability, you know, you got the color balance wrong or something like that. You know what I mean? You, it's too fuzzy, or I mean, you're not going to get sued over that. So I guess what I would say, but I think number one, I think it's a great idea. How are you promoting it right now? I mean, how are you getting into it right now?
Well, I've done a few photo montages, turned into video, like you were discussing earlier, at the person's wake. I've done a few of those, and I do a little bit of a transfer from VHS to DVD. I haven't actually done any interviews yet, but I have earned, you know, just a couple dollars here and there from the photo montages, and I do these basically just for fun.
Right, I get it.
But several people have told me that, you know, they would like to do something like this on a regular basis. And I was just wondering, at what point? I mean,
here's the thing. Generally, you want to incorporate or do an LLC, do a formal business organization, when the thing, when the liability starts staring you in the face, and that could be while it's still a hobby. Or when you're making real money at it, either way, you could still have that liability. With what you're doing, the liability is extremely low, it would seem to me. So I wouldn't be in any rush to incorporate the thing. On the other hand, and when you file your taxes, you do what's called a Schedule C, income from trade or business. Now you can deduct your memory cards and your video equipment and all the rest of that stuff. Do you see?
Even if I've already purchased it, I mean.
Well, yeah, when you turn it into the business, now you're going to use it. Now it's not just hobby anymore. Now it's your business, and now you can start deducting those expenses.
Okay.
So I mean, that's
the only liability I can really foresee at this point. Is when I bring my equipment into people's homes to do the interviews, because I plan on doing them at their residence,
right,
or wherever they would like to have it done.
Right. I tell you what, Robert, I'm getting the high sign here. So if you want to hang on through the break, that'd be great, and we can go into it a little bit further. Okay. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
Limbo, limbo, limbo like me. Big one.
All of those tourists covered with oil.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, broadcasting to you from tropical, subtropical Grand Rapids, Michigan. That's right. Lovely, lovely. You know, only problem now is how do we keep up with how do we get enough sunscreen? That's the issue. Well, anyway, we've got Robert. Okay, maybe it's not the issue. We've got Robert on the line. Robert has got one of those hobbies that has the potential to grow into a real livelihood. He's a videographer, and I guess he's putting together some of these. You know, you've seen them, the montages, and you know, the I guess your focus right now has been on the on memorial montages. Is that right, Robert?
No, basically it's been more more fun than that.
Oh, okay.
I have done some memorial montages, and I have them up on my website. But I've been wanting to get more into like what you see on the Biography Channel, A&E Biography.
Oh, okay.
Where they conduct interviews and put photographs up on the screen to enhance what the interviewee is saying.
Sure, sure. You know, I've seen them. There's a guy out in Boston who's done a couple of my siblings, a brother and a sister, where it was their like a wedding anniversary or a you know, their 40th birthday or something like that, you know, where their spouses put it together for them. And so there were interviews from other people and quotes and stuff like that. And then you know, that kind of. So anyway, there's definitely a market for that kind of thing. And it's the sort of thing where the investment, you know, the barriers to entry are very low. You just have to develop the reputation, and then it's just a matter of how do you want to go about that. I mean, do you approach the, you know, for example, the you know, see, around here it'd be the Caregiver Network, Senior Caregiver Network might be one way. The Alzheimer's Association. There are lots of ways into that. You know, to find out the people who might be interested in that kind of thing, and then of course. Wedding planners, and you know, there's a lot of ways, but I think right now, you know, your camera falls over and breaks the Ming vase, you know, in somebody's house. Yeah, you know, you might have liability that way, but as I say, it's much different than the liability that a building contractor or a restaurateur or a caterer or somebody like that has. Okay, so it's just everything's relative, right? But go ahead.
I was wondering if I could just get bonded for that kind of liability.
Well, not you wouldn't get bonded. You get insured, right? Go to your agent, wherever they've got your homeowners and your auto insurance, that kind of thing. You know, that would be a good place to, if you're happy with those people, that would be a good place to start. You know.
Okay.
But I mean, you can certainly get business insurance. You know, and insurance is always a good idea, simply because that's the first line of defense. Okay, if somebody has a complaint, go talk to my insurance agent. But having the limited liability company or the corporation in place is also very important in case the insurance company decides that they don't cover that sort of liability. Do you see? If they don't cover it, now what? Well, now you've got your LLC that is another, that I call it the structural solution, because now you've got a structure in place. It's not just the insurance. And if the question is when do you get to that point, well, I don't care if you're making no money at all. If you're in a risky business, catering, building, you know, personal training, anything like that, where the liability is pretty obvious, then I would say incorporate, do the LLC immediately. With what you're doing, it seems to me that the risk is relatively low, and if you wanted to put off the expense of incorporation or setting up a company until, you know, the thing started to really get some legs under it, well, that makes sense. That makes sense to me. But eventually you're going to want to, eventually you're going to do that, right? Eventually you are going to.
Now, would you recommend an LLC right off the get-go, or I was thinking about making it a sole proprietorship.
Well, sole proprietor is what you are anyway. You just show up and you're
right.
A sole proprietor, okay?
Okay.
You know, you just file your schedule. You don't have to do anything to be a – now, in some counties, you can register the name. I think it's $10 or $15 for a couple of 3 years of registering your name. But you get very little protection. There's no liability protection from that.
Right. I understand that.
Yeah. But, you know, and I wouldn't do a corporation either based on what you're telling me, simply because what we're looking for here are not tax benefits, but liability protection. So the limited liability company, you don't have to get a new tax return. You don't have to get a new... You don't have to get a new, you don't have to file new tax returns. You don't have to get a new tax ID number. There's less involved with being a limited liability company than there is in being a corporation, an S corporation, which was probably what you'd want to do. But, you know, just for liability purposes, the LLC will do it for you. You still file your Schedule C. You still pay all your self-employment taxes and all that. But I think that's the way you'd organize the thing. You know, once it gets legs under it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, I haven't earned enough income from the hobby, as it were, to pay any taxes though.
All right. Well, I don't know. Have you had any net profit?
It's hard to say. Like I said, I do this mostly as a hobby right now. For people, and so I don't charge them any fees other than what it costs me to make it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you see, whenever you take money in, you have income. Okay, and you do have to report that on the Schedule C. Now, the fact is you may have expenses that balance that out. That doesn't mean that you don't have to file the return. You do have to file the return. Okay, you do have to file your Schedule C. It's just that you've got deductions against it. Now, if you're talking a few hundred dollars, you know, it's not likely to make much difference. But legally, and you know, and we're having a lively legal discussion, which is not legal advice, but legally, you got to file the Schedule C whenever you take money from somebody else.
Okay.
That's sort of the deal on that. Hey, I'm getting the high sign here. We got to get out. Thanks for giving us a call, Robert. You know,
thank you.
Let us know how it goes. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.